The air in the Frankfurt office always smelled like expensive espresso and industrial-grade floor wax. It was a sterile glass and steel cathedral of productivity where I thought I could disappear into the data. I was 28, a Korean expat with a resume that screamed overachiever and a personal life that was virtually non-existent. I liked the rules. I liked the boundaries. In Seoul, the hierarchy kept you safe. In Germany, the professional distance was supposed to be my armor. Then I met Lucas. Lucas wasn't just my senior project lead. He was the personification of everything I had been taught to admire and fear. He was tall, impeccably tailored, and possessed that blunt, Teutonic efficiency that made every word he spoke feel like a definitive command. For the first 6 months, our relationship was nothing more than shared spreadsheets and late-night emails about supply chain logistics. I was the reliable analyst. He was the visionary director. We were a well-oiled machine, and I took pride in that. I thought I was untouchable because I followed the protocol to the letter. The shift happened on a Tuesday in November. The sun had set at 4 p.m., and the office was a ghost town of empty ergonomic chairs and glowing monitors. We were finalizing the quarterly projections, sitting close enough that I could smell the faint woody scent of his cologne, something expensive and sharp, like cedar after a rainstorm. I reached for a printed report at the same time he did. His hand didn't pull away when our fingers brushed. Instead, he let it linger. It wasn't a mistake. It was a question. "You work too hard, Hannah," he said, his voice dropping an octave, losing the sharp edge of the boardroom. He didn't look at the paper. He looked at me. I should have pulled back. I should have made a joke about the deadline or mentioned the HR policy on fraternization that I knew by heart. But in that cold, fluorescent-lit room, his warmth felt like a lifeline. I was tired of being the perfect immigrant, the perfect employee, the perfect daughter. I wanted to be seen as something other than a high-functioning asset. "Someone has to," I whispered, my heart hammering against my ribs so loudly I was sure he could hear it. He didn't say another word. He just reached out, tucked a stray lock of my black hair behind my ear, and leaned in. That first kiss tasted like desperation and dark chocolate. It was a total collapse of everything I had built. I knew, even as my eyes closed, that I was stepping off a cliff. But the fall felt better than standing still. The weeks that followed were a blur of adrenaline and mounting anxiety. We became experts at the invisible touch. A hand brushing against a lower back in the elevator, a lingering gaze during a presentation, the coded language in our Slack messages that looked like business but felt like fire. He made it intimate in ways I hadn't expected. He didn't just want my body. He wanted my secrets. He pushed me to tell him about my childhood in Incheon, about the pressure of my parents' expectations, about the loneliness of living in a city where I was always the Asian girl in logistics. But the intimacy came with a price. Lucas started making things risky. He liked the thrill of the near miss. He would pull me into a supply closet moments before a meeting, or whisper suggestions into my ear while we stood at the coffee machine in full view of the marketing team. I tried to pull back. Tried to tell him that we were playing with matches in a room full of gasoline, but he would just laugh and tell me I was too tense. "Enjoy the life, Hannah," he'd say, his blue eyes flashing with a predatory kind of playfulness. "We are adults. We are free." But I wasn't free. I was on a work visa. I was the one whose reputation was tied to my unimpeachable work ethic. Lucas had been with the firm for 15 years. He was part of the furniture. I was a guest who could be asked to leave at any moment. The crash happened during the annual holiday gala. We had both had too much Riesling, and the professional masks were slipping. We were in a darkened hallway near the coat check, thinking we were shielded by a heavy velvet curtain. We weren't. One of the junior associates, a girl who had always looked at me with a mix of envy and suspicion, walked right past the gap in the drapes. She didn't say anything, but the look on her face told me my life as I knew it was over. By Monday morning, the whispers had reached a fever pitch. "It's funny how a workplace turns on you." The men looked at Lucas with a wink and a nod, a well done hidden in their handshakes. But the looks I got were different. They were cold. They were judgmental. Suddenly, my promotions weren't the result of my 80-hour weeks. They were favors. My insights in meetings were rehearsed. I wasn't the brilliant analyst anymore. I was the girl who had used her body to climb the ladder. The HR investigation was a surgical, soul-crushing experience. I sat across from a woman who looked at me like I was a smudge on a clean window. Lucas, of course, had a different story. He played the part of the powerful man led astray by a persistent subordinate. He didn't lie exactly. He just framed it so that the initiative was always mine. He stayed. I was encouraged to resign to avoid a public scandal. The sting wasn't just losing the job. It was the realization that in the eyes of the world, my desire was a weapon, while his was just a hobby. I walked out of that building with my head high, but inside, I was shattered. I learned the hardest way possible, that in the corporate world, the rules don't apply to everyone equally. Desire is a luxury for those who already hold the power. For the rest of us, it's a trap.